Hello, what is up, everybody? Welcome into Living Off the Land. This is episode 275. I'm your host, Dan, here with my co-host, Steven. How we doing?
Oh, it's a great day. It's Tuesday night. You know what that means. Another great episode of LOTL. We got all the normal segments and some other fun stuff to cover tonight. First of all, we might not have the beer of the week.
We do not have beer of the week this week.
Oh, that's, I guess we're minus one. Okay.
0-1. Yeah.
I guess that means that B-Can is leading off tonight in the one hole. So last week, we went to Fairfax neighborhood on the, you know, central near east side, near the Cleveland Clinic main campus. 2 weeks ago, we started our renewed journey through Cleveland in the Lee Miles neighborhood way down the southeast corner. Tonight, we are going to the west side for the first time. We are going to a neighborhood, one of my favorite neighborhoods in the whole city, and it's a neighborhood that a lot of people really place in high regard, and I'm talking about Cam's Corners. Cam's Corners is in the almost southwest corner of the city. It's actually just north of Hopkins Airport on the west side. It is bounded on the west by the Cuyahoga River, in the south by Puritas Avenue, in the east by the Red Line, that's the train, and in the north by I-90. So if you go north from Cam's Corners, you're in Lakewood. If you go to the west, you're in Fairview Park. And if you go to the east, you are in the West Park neighborhood. Of course, if you go south, then you're, you know, at Hopkins. So that's your basic geography there. If you look at the housing market in Cam's Corners, this housing market is very competitive. It is very much on the rise. The median home prices last year were up about 3.8% in 2023, selling for a median price of $220,000. To put that into context, the state average is about $213,000. So this is actually above the state median for home prices. According to Realtor.com, the average house in Cam's Corner sells only after 14 days on the market. So that's only 2 weeks. You know, so that means that for everyone that stays on the market for a whole month, you got another that's going in just a couple of days.
Yeah, two weeks actually. I mean, given the housing market over the last few years, actually is kind of long.
Yeah, compared to some areas, it certainly can be. I mean, there's some areas where it's like, yeah, it's like you don't see it in the first or second day, it's gone. But in any case, the average home price in Cam's Corners was only $175,000 in 2021. So if you think about that, you're talking about an almost, you know, 25% increase over the last 3 years. So it's been pretty substantial what's going on in this particular part of the city. And what makes Cam's Corners just so desirable? Well, it could be the fact that it is, you know, the residential properties are pretty nice. You've got decent businesses, particularly in the corridor along Rocky River Drive, which is Route 237, and Lorraine Avenue, which cuts right through the neighborhood from west to east. I'll highlight just a few of these as we go here. The first one is Public House, which is right on that main intersection. You've got just north of that, you've got the Peace, Love, and Little Donuts of West Park donut shop, which apparently is a really cool place to hang out in the mornings. Gene's Place to Dine. I've been by this place. I've not been in it. It looks like one of those. It reminds me a little bit of a place I used to work in Strongsville called Palmer's before it turned into Triv's. It's almost like one of those like old style, you know, home style type places that maybe the older generation likes to frequent. Also along this corridor, you've got Hatfield's Good Grub, which is a southern type place, a little bit of soul food as well. Si Senor Mexican is right next door to that. And then, of course, you've got West Park Station, which is, you know, more of a traditional American grill right along Lorraine. But who are we kidding here? St. Patrick's Day is on Sunday, and the top Irish pub in the whole city is literally sitting right in the center of this neighborhood, and that is PJ McIntyre's Irish Pub. You cannot go wrong with pretty much anything in this place, drink or food. This place is 4.7 star rated on Google. I don't know who could have possibly downrated this. I'm shame on them, quite frankly. 17119 Lorraine Avenue, right at the corner of Rocky River Drive and Lorraine Avenue. Traditional pouch house, pub chouse delivered alongside a long beer list in a cheery neighborhood joint. That is about a perfect explanation for what PJ McIntyre's is. Definitely a place, you know, if you go there on Sunday, get there like several hours before opening. Otherwise, you may not get a table. It is that, and that goes for a lot of the other places in the city, like, you know, Flannery's on East 4th Street, Pride of Erin, which is, I believe, in the West Park neighborhood. That's, I think, at Lorraine and West 120th, and various other places in the city. They're all going to be packed. So the St. Patrick's Day, you know, people don't need a reason to drink and just hang out all day. But the fact that St. Patrick's Day is on a Sunday this year, I mean, it just sets it up to be that kind of a day. So,
I think that's St. Patrick's Day on a Sunday is brutal.
Oh, you don't think that's good?
No, why would that be good? People have to work the next day.
Well, maybe.
So unless you're taking the day off.
I mean, if it's the same thing if it falls in the middle of the week. So, I don't know. Maybe last year was more desirable with it falling on a Friday. Maybe not if you're the Catholic Church and you're telling people not to eat corned beef on a Friday. Yeah, right. Like, that's going to fly.
Yeah, that that definitely deserves a special dispensation to eat the corned beef. So,
yeah, for sure.
Are you a fan of the corned beef?
I do like corned beef.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not my favorite meat of all time, but it's nice. I like it.
Yeah, it's the St. Paddy's Day staple. So, I think we're going to be eating corned beef on Sunday, but I'm not really sure of my plans yet. But I will say, if you don't really want to go downtown and deal with, you know, not being able to park and just fighting through the enormous crowds that usually happen downtown for St. Patrick's Day, especially around the parade, Cam's Corner is the place to be. Obviously, Steve said PJ McIntyre's, but any bar turns into an Irish bar on St. Patrick's Day. So West Park Station,
absolutely.
Hatfields, Smedley's, which is over there, which is an Irish pub. There's a few more that I'm missing. Jeez. But yeah. But the PJ's is where it's at. That's the spot to go. Been there many, many a time for St. Patrick's Day, and it's packed. So I'm, you know, go in with that mindset of you're gonna be packed in like sardines in a can. But that's just kind of how it is on St. Patrick's Day. One of the most underrated cities that puts on St. Patrick's Day is Cleveland.
Oh, without a doubt.
Obviously, probably the most famous city in the nation for St. Patrick's Day is probably Chicago. You can make a claim for Boston, and then obviously New York. But Chicago, with the dying of the river that goes through downtown Chicago, and just the stuff that they put on. Cleveland is right there, so.
Why don't we dye the Cuyahoga River green?
I don't know. That'd be a good question.
Maybe it's just Chicago's thing. We don't want to copy off of them, but
probably.
Like, that's, I don't know. I've always wondered about that. One place I did want to point out before we move on here, Fairview Hospital, which is the main birthing hospital on Cleveland West Side for Cleveland Clinic, is in this neighborhood, right just above the Cuyahoga, the Rocky River. And that was where my daughter Scarlett was born. So that place holds a special place in my heart. So in either case, that is Cam's Corners, and you can wham that with the right hand.
All right. Another one in the hopper.
On a slightly more somber note, let's talk about the week that was with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Let's just get to the playoffs.
Have we seen this movie before? Yes, we have. Where the Cavs, maybe they start super hot early, maybe they don't, but at some point in the middle of the season, they go on a big run and everything's great and they rise up the standings. And I don't know what it is. It seems like the All-Star break always comes at the wrong time for us because we just don't seem to carry it after that. Now, this year is a little more explainable because you don't have Donovan Mitchell right now. You don't have Evan Mobley right now.
It's injuries.
You don't have
Max Strus is out. You're missing three starters.
Dean Wade's got something personal going on. He's not even playing right now.
He had a kid, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, wow. Well, congratulations to him if that's true. Yeah, it's you're missing a lot of key personnel right now, and it's a struggle. You know, they went this the week started in Atlanta, which we on this show last week we just all thought, oh, okay, we're gonna lose that game because we always lose in Atlanta. Sure enough, we did. Next night, big game against
yeah, what was it? I think against Atlanta, we scored like 44 points in the third quarter and then scored 12 in the fourth quarter. Yeah.
Crazy.
I mean, I get it, you know, back second night of back-to-back on the road, maybe they, you know, they
fatigue.
Yeah, they lack of a better word, they shot their shot there in the third quarter and then they just went ice cold in the fourth.
And then the night before was when they had their big comeback against Boston. So it's weird right now. You're looking at the distribution of the games lately and you're saying to yourself, how are the Cavs beating teams like Dallas and Boston and Minnesota? The Minnesota game on Friday was awesome. It was a game that went, you know, it was tight all the way, went down to the final minutes, and Rudy Gobert quite literally cost the Timberwolves that game by getting a flagrant foul on elbowing Jared Allen, which gave the Cavs two free throws, and then getting teed up when he got fouled out of the game, which gave the Cavs a technical free throw, which ultimately was the reason why the game ended up tied after regulation. And then he wasn't in the overtime, and the Cavs just drove it to the hole on every play in overtime.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't have Karl Anthony Towns in that game, but, you know, like we said about the Cavs, we didn't have Donovan Mitchell, we didn't have Evan Mobley, we didn't have Max Strus. So, you know, just being down three starters is just like, oh, man, you know, we were on pace there, and I think we still are, but we were on pace to have a better record than we did last year. I don't know what our record is now. I think it's like 41 and 24. Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and like we were talked about last week, if these guys miss many more games, the East is so packed. The Cavs could go, I don't know what seed they are right now, but they were the 2 seed. They could fall into the play-in tournament.
They do stand third at the moment, but they're lead on that teams in those pack or have shrunk. We'll get to that in a second. Yeah, if there's a game that really does sort of like, you know, you can give the team a pass for injuries to a certain extent, but the game that kind of annoyed me most this week was the game against Brooklyn. Brooklyn's not even good, and the Cavs were not even in that game remotely from the very beginning. They lost by 19. I don't know. I just feel like they maybe just seemed like effort-wise, they just weren't in it for whatever reason. Then they play Phoenix.
Well, that game was close until the fourth quarter. We just got badgered in the fourth quarter again. Or no. No, that game was close at halftime.
It was the third quarter where Brooklyn scored 44 points and just completely.
Yeah, the Nets went haywire in the third quarter. But
they then played Phoenix. They lost on Monday night to Phoenix after being in that game most of the way. That annoys me because I hate Kevin Durant with a passion. Anytime that guy comes into our building and beats us, I'm not happy. So,
yeah, well, I mean, what are you going to say?
It is what it is.
You're down three starters. I mean, you know, it's just they're just getting outgunned. They're getting outmanned right now. I mean, it's tough because, you know, you want to after the way that the season ended last year, you want to hold this team accountable. You want to make sure that they make it so last year was just a fluke, and that's why I want to play the Knicks again in the first round. I want to play them. Maybe that's a death wish. I don't know. But I need us to beat them to prove that last year was a fluke. But at the same time right now, it's just like, I mean, I don't know how you can really get mad at this team. They're just so decimated right now.
Agreed.
I guess Donovan Mitchell's been upgraded to questionable to play tomorrow night. They probably still hold him out tomorrow. I know Evan Mobley's now out of a walking boot, but I'm gonna guess he's still a couple weeks away from coming back.
And then, at least.
And then I don't know about Max Strus. I'm not really familiar with his injury, but you know, obviously getting Donovan Mitchell back would be an enormous boost. He's the best player on your team. It would be great to get him back as soon as possible, so we can get back on the right track. You know, the timing was really bad. Our March schedule is not easy, and
no.
we have a bunch of guys out. I mean, what can you do? You know, I just hope we don't free fall at this point.
Yeah.
So hopefully we get Donovan and Max Strus back soon, and then, you know, hopefully we can get Evan back for the push for the last couple weeks of the season and into the playoffs.
Looking ahead to the next week, you've got a three-game road trip coming up here. You go to New Orleans tomorrow, followed by a game against Houston Saturday, and then you come back to play Indianapolis on Monday. The Pelicans are having a decent season. At last check, I believe they were fourth in the West. The Rockets are bad, but they're not as alarmingly bad as they were a year ago. And then Indiana has been a team that's given us a lot of trouble this year. So
is that game at home or on the road?
It's away.
That's a loss.
So now I see Indianapolis is almost as bad as Atlanta.
Yeah,
in terms
of
places that we've
never. When LeBron James is not, even when he is on the Cavs in the regular season, the playoffs obviously not, but in the regular season we just do not go there and win. I don't even know what that place is called now. It's not what it used to be called. It's not Bankers Life anymore.
Mm.
It was Conseco Fieldhouse before that. It's not that anymore. I don't even know what that place is called. And I'm pretty sure they just hosted the All-Star game, but
they did, actually.
I digress. Yeah, I don't know what that place is called now.
Anyway, if you look at the standings, Boston way ahead in first in the East. No one's going to catch them at 50-14. The Bucks have moved into second at 42-23. Cavs third, 41-24. Then behind, so we've got a 3.5-game lead on fourth place New York still. That's good.
Yeah.
But some of that cushion we had, I think it was like 5 at this time last week. So we've lost some ground. So now you've got the Knicks at 37-27, Magic 37-28, Philly 36-28,
yeah,
and then Indianapolis and Miami holding 7-8 right now, 36-29 and 35-29.
So this is why the rest of this regular, like a lot of times, you know, especially when we had LeBron on the team, LeBron was always famous for saying, "Just get me in. It doesn't matter what seed I am. Just get me into the playoffs."
Yeah.
Obviously, not having LeBron changes that, and seeding becomes much more important. So right now, you're looking at having to play Milwaukee in the second round.
Yes.
If the Cavs get through the first round, obviously.
Which I would be just fine with. We've played the Bucks very well over the last few years.
But these injuries...
Presuming that each team has their, you know, actual teams.
These injuries and this recent downturn we've had because of these injuries have now, in that second round potential series, given Milwaukee home court advantage.
That's correct.
So, you know, we'll see what happens. But, yeah, I don't know.
As far as staying in front of the pack from fourth through eighth, which is, again, New York, Orlando, Philly, Indy, and Miami,
mm-hmm.
I think the target is 50 wins, which would mean the Cavs will have to go 9-8 the rest of the way. If they do that, that would force the Knicks to go 13-5. To catch them, it would force the Magic to go 13-4.
Yeah,
I think that's asking a lot for those teams in that middle pack to catch up. Anything below 50 wins, I think there's a good chance that the Cavs may fall below third.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we need to get our guys back, and we need to. I would like to see this team win about 53 games.
They were definitely looking to do that. The way things were going. Now, I mean, they'd have to go 12-5 the rest of the way. I think that's going to be a tall order.
If healthy, they could do that.
They
but
could.
We're not healthy, so
no.
It's going to be tough. But,
in either case, quickly looking at the Western Conference, the Thunder are in first at 45-19.
That's still crazy.
The Nuggets are second and a half game behind. The Timberwolves have fallen off a little bit. They're now a game and a half behind in third place.
Yeah, Karl Anthony Towns being injured does not help that.
Yeah. Clippers are fourth, and then behind them you've got the Pelicans, the Suns, the Kings, and the Mavericks right now, fifth through eighth. And, of course, I mentioned this last week, highly, highly interesting. You got the Lakers at ninth and the Warriors at 10th.
Yeah.
Which means as it stands right now, those two teams will be playing each other in a one game and out at the beginning of the play-in tournament.
Yep.
That would be must-see TV as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
yeah, so, I mean, I really don't know what to say other than, you know, we got to get our guys back healthy. That's the bottom line.
Pretty much.
So
you just hope that they can, with the guys they have, that they can, you know, maybe they beat Houston. I don't expect them to beat New Orleans. You know, maybe by then Mitchell comes back for when, by the time they play Indiana. I don't feel very good about that game, honestly. Maybe they come back and they beat Miami two nights later and we get a 2-2 week. I mean, that I think is the best case scenario for this upcoming week.
Yeah.
Honestly. But, I mean, none of the games are completely unwinnable, but it's just so hard when you're missing so much key guys.
Yeah.
So that's the week that was with the Cavs, and, you know, hopefully this next week doesn't turn out to be as dire as the previous one was.
Yeah, not good. Cavs play tomorrow, right?
Yes, they do. They play in New Orleans.
Boo. Let's hope the boys aren't out on Bourbon Street late tonight. So, all right. Well, anyway, boy, I tell you what, it seems like we talk about this every year, but does the NFL just does not have an off season at this point?
Almost not, because the Super Bowl is now middle of February, and free agency starts not even a month after that.
And so, in between that, the NFL Combine,
which is strategically placed about halfway between each.
Yeah, and then tomorrow. Monday started the quote-unquote legal tampering period where teams would handshake, agree to deals. Tomorrow is when deals actually start getting signed, which is when the owners' meetings are happening. I wonder if we're going to hear any tidbits from the Browns about a potential new stadium information tomorrow. Tomorrow is going to be probably the only time until training camp where we hear from Browns owners Jimmy and Dee Haslam. So I wonder if we will learn any new tidbits about where the Browns stand. And, of course, if you want to go back and listen to our opinions about the stadium deal, go back a couple episodes ago. We talk about it in great detail. But I wonder if we're going to hear anything from the Browns tomorrow. I can't confirm nor deny that that's going to happen, but just kind of reading the tea leaves, if that's going to happen before training camp, it's going to happen tomorrow because that's when the owners' meetings are. Media gathers at the owners' meetings, and they try to get any sort of tidbit they possibly can. So so that is what's going on in the NFL this week. The NFL, it has gone just bananas this week. As far as free agency goes, just tons and tons of player movement. The Browns did a little bit today. I would say they actually have been a bit reserved so far. The biggest piece of news was them re-signing their own players, namely Za'Darius Smith getting re-signed to a two-year extension worth up to $25 million. So they're basically paying him the same amount per year that they did last year. So no real effect on the cap there for the Browns. We have seen some departures for the Browns, namely Sione Takitaki, who goes to the Patriots. They lost another linebacker. Anthony Walker signed a one-year deal with the Miami Dolphins. Special teams ace, and no, not my brother, Mike Ford, signed with the Houston Texans.
Oh, that's too bad.
So we lost him. But as I said, they re-signed Za'Darius Smith. They also re-signed Mo Hurst on the defensive line, which was a big he was a really good player for us last year. So that was important. That was an under-the-radar signing for the Browns. The Browns also, you know, with the departure of two linebackers, they signed linebacker from the Minnesota Vikings, Jordan Hicks, to a two-year, $8 million deal. I'm trying to think what else we did. Oh, well, did we talk about this yet? But did we talk about this last week, Jerry Jeudy?
No.
Oh. I can't remember when that deal went down.
No, that was over the weekend, I think.
That's right. Yeah, so I guess I'm burying the lead here. The biggest move that the Browns made was actually before tampering started, and it wasn't a free agent signing. It was a trade. Browns sent a 5th and 6th round pick to Denver for former first-round wide receiver Jerry Jeudy. And he joins the Browns. Interestingly enough, was a Alabama Crimson Tide, just like our number one receiver, Amari Cooper. So, and Jerry Jeudy has publicly talked about the fact that Amari Cooper was the guy that he modeled his game after when he committed to Alabama. So that's really interesting that now they're going to be playing together. And, you know, we kind of talked about it through our text chat with our brothers, but what do you think about the move to trade for Jerry Jeudy?
I think the Jerry Jeudy trade is great, quite frankly. There was whether they keep Amari Cooper or not, because I know that that's a...
Oh, this year they're keeping Amari Cooper. Yeah, he's not going anywhere.
Because I thought that was one of the major offseason questions, but that's been resolved, and that makes me even happier because...
No, he has 1 year left on his contract. He will... I mean, unless they were going to trade him, but I don't think that's happening. I think more so you're going to see a contract restructure from him.
Hmm.
But yeah, Amari Cooper's
back.
I mean,
you're looking
at
having him and Jeudy and Elijah Moore, who now gets to play in the slot, which is where he's naturally best at anyway. And then, oh, by the way, you've got David Njoku as well. You know, that's a lot of personnel, and of course Nick Chubb is coming back. So, you know, that, I got to say, maybe this is the wrong way to look at it, but it almost puts more pressure on Deshaun Watson because it just means that, hey, we've got all the pieces now. It's on you. You've got the keys. Let's go do this.
This is the third year of the Deshaun Watson tenure of the Cleveland Browns. So in the first 2 years, the first year was basically wrecked because of suspension. Last year, he got injured 2 or 3 times and missed, you know, he only played in 6 games. Look, this is put up or shut up time. So I'm all for that. I'm all for pushing the chips in the middle and saying, all right, guy, let's go. Let's see what you got. Are you going to resurrect your Pro Bowl career, or, you know, is this going to be, you know, just a giant poop sandwich?
I think just as big of a deal as all of this was, you know, like you mentioned restructuring earlier. You know, restructuring Jed Wills' contract, saving a whole bunch of money on the salary cap this year. Andrew Berry just continues to work the salary cap like you wouldn't believe. I drew comparisons between him and Sonny Weaver from, you know, the movie Draft Day. Yeah, it just seems like he always has another ace up his sleeve somehow.
And yeah, I mean, I keep wanting to clear up a misconception about this. Like, look, what Andrew Berry is doing is great, but it's what he's doing is not rocket science. Every single GM in the NFL can do this. It takes an owner who's willing to spend to be able to do these moves. Like, the reason why these contract restructurings are happening is to lessen the impact on the current salary cap. That doesn't mean that these players are not getting their money. Contrary, they're actually getting all of that money up front. So if an owner... If Jimmy and Dee Haslam were like, these restructured deals wouldn't be happening and the Browns wouldn't be able to sign all these people. Yeah, Andrew Berry is doing a good job. I'm not saying he's not. What I'm saying is if Andrew Berry was the general manager of the Bengals,
he wouldn't be able to do this.
None of this stuff would be happening.
So in other words, give Haslam a lot of the credit here as well.
The Haslams deserve the lion's share of the credit because they are willing to spend whatever it takes. I think we talked about this before. The Browns, year over year, over the last 3 years, are far and away the team that has spent the most cash on their roster above every other team. And that's a credit to them. You know, the Haslams get a bunch of crap, rightly so. The Browns, for the most part, outside of the last couple years, have been absolute garbage under their tenure. But credit where it's due. The Browns are in a situation where they can do these things to be able to improve their roster as much as they can because the Haslams are willing to pay the check. Like when, let's say Deshaun Watson, who's owed about $40 million this year, and is going to count, because they restructured his contract last year, he's going to count about $60 million against the cap if they don't restructure his contract. If they restructure his contract and they get his cap hit down to about $10 million, that doesn't mean Deshaun Watson's only getting paid $10 million this year. That means that they convert his salary into a bonus and they just give him basically a $35 million check up front for the year. Like,
straight cash.
Exactly. And that's why I give the credit to the Haslams, because, listen, Andrew Berry brought a plan to the Haslams of, hey, if we're going to go after Deshaun Watson, we've got to put people around him, and I need the flexibility to be able to do that. The Haslams gave their okay, say, hey, we're willing to cut the checks. Go ahead. And then Andrew Berry went on his merry way of manipulating the salary cap. So, again, I don't want to take anything away from Andrew Berry, but this isn't like, it's not, this stuff has happened in the NFL before. It's not like he's like creating new ways to go about working the salary cap. The Eagles are masterminds at doing this. They do it all the time. But the Browns are doing it on a higher level, restructuring a bunch of contracts. Most teams do it, restructure contracts so they can just barely get under the cap. The Browns are doing it. They're spending the most cash of any team in the NFL and are trying to get as far below the salary cap as possible so they can continue to add players to that salary cap. So I just wanted to mention that because I think that goes... I think everybody sees a contract restructure and they're like, oh, Andrew Berry is the smartest GM in the world. Like Andrew Berry does a good job. He's a good NFL GM. But he can't do what he does if the Haslams don't okay the spending.
Sounds like whoever the Browns salary cap analyst is needs a lot of this credit as well.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know who the Allie Parker of the Browns in present is, but...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. You know.
But yeah.
Yeah. So... Honestly, you look at the Browns' offense now, the key pieces that they're going to have, and you say to yourself, maybe this offense is good, presumably, that we don't lose Watson, we don't lose Chubb and stuff like we did a year ago. Presumably, this is an offense that, you know, on the days where the defense has a bad day and gives up 30-some points, that this offense could actually, you know, do the same and maybe win some of those games in shootouts.
Yeah, I mean, reminiscent to the Colts game this year, where I think we won 38-37 or something.
Yeah.
39-38, something like that.
Peach.
Yeah. Good old Peach. Not going to be seeing a lot of Peach this year, I'll tell you. Especially after the quarterback we signed today. We'll get to that.
Mm.
But yeah. You know, it's... Boy... I don't know where I'm at with the Browns this year. Because everything hinges on Deshaun Watson staying healthy.
We know
going into this and I'm not just throwing Nick Chubb to the wayside. We know Nick Chubb is a huge part of the offense, but we also know that he's more than likely going to miss the first half of the season. So, you know, If we're 2-6 at the midway point, you know, what's the point of him even playing at all? Which, by God, if we're 2-6,
I want to replay that soundbite when it comes to August Kool-Aid season. It'd be like, Dan, back in March, you mentioned the possibility of the Browns being 2-6.
I was talking in relation to Nick Chubb's availability. I'm saying like if we're two and six at week 9. Does it even make sense for Nick Chubb to risk it and play this season? That's what I'm talking about. I don't think we're going to be 2-6. If we're 2-6, I'm at the 480 bridge.
Shame on you for even suggesting that.
Oh, you know I'm going to say the Browns are going to go 12-5, 13-4 in August. You know that's coming.
And I may not disagree with that if it comes down to that. I mean, yeah, we've got a long way before we get to prediction time, but
yeah.
I don't know. I kind of like what I'm seeing out of Berea right now.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. How about before we get to the quarterback that the Browns signed today? How about what the Steelers did?
Oh, with signing Queen?
No. Well, that, I mean, whatever. Overpaying for a linebacker, fine. Go ahead. No, they brought in Mr. Unlimited.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah. Russ Wilson. Interesting.
This is highly fascinating because the Broncos just discarded him like he was expired food. Like, yep. It doesn't make much sense to me. Like, clearly the Broncos are in free fall or in a fire sale right now. I don't know why else they will let Jerry Jeudy go for like a late round draft pick or whatever they did.
Well, they were gonna lose him anyway because he was in the last year of his contract and he was not going back there.
So, but now you got Russell Wilson going to Pittsburgh. So,
who's going to play quarterback in Denver?
Joe Flacco.
Maybe.
I mean, at this point, that's probably his most likely landing place now that Jacoby Brissett is in New England.
Yeah, could be.
You know, who knows? You know, I wonder about Pittsburgh a little bit. So, in the best case scenario for the Steelers, Russell Wilson shows some of his prior form in Seattle, and everything runs great in Pittsburgh, and they're in the playoffs and maybe even contending for the AFC or blah, blah, blah. Worst case scenario, it turns out not to be good. He's only as good as, say, Cody Pickett, and they go like 9-8 again.
You yeah.
Know? So, I mean, I'd love to hope for worse than that, but I'm realistic. It just doesn't happen. So,
you'd think one of these years it's got to happen.
Where they just... You know, either it just doesn't work out or they have massive injuries and they go 4-13. You know,
yeah.
We're all waiting for that, but I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
But anyhow, I don't feel like that's a move that really helps Pittsburgh all that much. I mean, maybe it does a little bit. I still think they're only going to go as far as coaching and their defense takes them.
Well, listen, they go from having the fourth best quarterback in the division to having the fourth best quarterback in the division.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Listen, I know Deshaun Watson, he was out a year because he wanted to get traded. Then he was suspended, and then last year he was hurt. I'm still taking Deshaun Watson over Russell Wilson.
Yes, I would too.
Listen, everybody points to the fact that Russell Wilson had good numbers last year with the Broncos. The Broncos stunk.
Their defense was not good at all.
They were bad.
I mean, they
bad.
Gave up 70 points in a game.
Russell Wilson, yeah, that's true. Russell Wilson is like in actuality, he fits in with Pittsburgh quite well. Russell Wilson is at his best when neither team gets out of the teens.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, even during the Legion of Boom era in Seattle, it was kind of like that too.
Yeah. And look, Russell Wilson's a borderline Hall of Fame quarterback in my opinion, but he's.
Yeah, that's a fascinating case because he does have a championship. He does have a Super Bowl MVP.
He's about 3 years removed from that form.
If it wasn't for a dumb play call by Pete Carroll, he'd probably be a multi-time Super Bowl winner.
True.
You know.
True. So, yeah, I don't really see that. And quite frankly, Vegas feels the same way. Their Super Bowl odds remain unchanged from before signing Russell Wilson to after. So Vegas does not think that Russell Wilson is going to make that much of an impact for the Steelers.
So if we've basically sized this up, you know, AFC North hierarchy of quarterbacks, who's on top?
That's such a tough call because, like, The obvious answer staring at you in the face would be the guy that just won the MVP, you would think.
Lamar Jackson. But he's not as good of a natural passer as
the number two and the number three options in the division both basically missed almost entire seasons last year. They both had season-ending injuries last year. Joe Burrow and Deshaun Watson. And then Mr. Unlimited, Russell Wilson. with the Steelers.
It just goes to show you what a flavor of the month thing it is, because, like, you go back 3-4 years ago, it was clearly Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Then last year, coming into the season, it was clearly Joe Burrow.
Yep.
And now,
which we had E. Crow
now,
on that.
Now it's like, oh, wait a minute. You know, who... You know, I had been in Lamar Jackson
listen,
and Ravens corner for a long time, and then I swapped to being a hater of theirs, and then they decided to be great last year.
I was going
to
say, you've never really liked Joe Burrow, and last year you thought the Ravens were going to win 5 games.
Yeah.
So who do you think is the best quarterback in the division?
Honestly, right, I think it's Burrow still.
Yeah.
I mean, barely.
Probably.
I just think that. I don't know.
Well, listen,
I think
he's the one that's been to a Super Bowl.
The reason I say Burrow, more so like, yeah, Burrow's the better passer, Jackson's the better rusher, you know, that sort of, you know, equals out. The fact of the matter is that Joe Burrow is a better postseason quarterback than Lamar Jackson is.
Yeah, I would agree.
Lamar Jackson's won, what, 2 playoff games?
Yep.
He's, what, 2-4, 2-5 all the time? Like, it's just, it's not good.
Yeah.
Like, Joe Burrow came within inches of becoming a Super Bowl champion.
Thank God.
Now,
thank God for those inches.
And more importantly, he is the only guy out of the last 5 years or whatever not named Tom Brady to have gotten the better of Patrick Mahomes in the postseason.
Yeah.
That has to count for a lot.
In Kansas, in Arrowhead,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, at Kansas City.
Yeah, so, I mean, you got to give credit where it's due. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Speaking of the Bengals, they franchised T. Higgins, and then he's like, yeah, I'm out of here. Trade me. He requested a trade. They signed...
Somehow I don't think the Bengals GM is going to just acquiesce to that.
Well, they can't pay him, so what are they going to do?
Are they over the salary cap? They can't franchise a guy if they're over the cap, right?
Well, he wants a long-term extension. They have not negotiated with him that yet because... they are cheapos, and
right.
They're not going to pay Jamar Chase and T. Higgins. They're just not
no.
going to. So who are you going to pay out of those two, Jamar Chase or T. Higgins?
They're going to pay Jamar Chase. They're just going to play this season, be like, you're playing on the one-year deal, and then you can leave after the season, I would think.
Yeah, but, I mean, they could also just franchise him again. You can franchise a guy 2 years in a row. That's the problem. T. Higgins wants long-term security.
I guess the question is how much of a malcontent does he become, or how much do the Bengals
where we're headed. He's going to become a malcontent. He's not going to show up to anything, and then they're just going to end up trading him. And then they go out and they sign Indianapolis's backup running back, Zach Moss, and then they trade Joe Mixon.
That made no sense to me.
So Joe Mixon goes to the Houston Texans. And shout out to our buddy and former co-host Jordan Gonzalez. I told him, because the Houston Texans were also in on the Derrick Henry sweepstakes, I told them that they got the better deal getting Joe Mixon than Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry actually signed with the Baltimore Ravens today. So,
which I don't really like, but yeah, how much tread is still on the tires for Derrick Henry? I guess that's the question there.
Right, and the Browns have always played well against Derrick Henry when he was on the Titans.
Yeah, the Titans were not a team that really gave the Browns much struggles.
Yeah,
over the last few years. Well, the opener in 2019 notwithstanding, because that was one very ugly game.
Ugh.
But aside, I think that's the only time the Titans have beaten the Browns over the last like 6-7 years.
I think you're right. So I know going back to
played them in 2020, and we were up by like 4 touchdowns at halftime.
That's true.
It ended up being not that much of a blowout in the end, but like it was, you know,
yep.
Kind of like the game from 2019.
Yeah, and if you want to go even farther back, I believe it was 2013 or 2014, where the Browns, led by former quarterback Brian Hoyer, brother to our friend of the show Brett, he led one of the biggest comebacks in NFL history. The Browns, I believe, were down by 27 in that game and came back and won.
They were down 28-3 at the half.
That's right.
And the reason I remember that is because I was in the building.
Oh,
that
there
day.
You go.
And so was our buddy Matt Steigerwald.
Nice. Very nice.
Was...
Yeah, so that's a nice trip down memory lane. Okay. Did you see the contract that Kirk Cousins signed?
No.
4 years, Mind you, this is for a 35-year-old quarterback who's coming off a torn Achilles.
Okay.
4 years, $180 million.
45 mil a season.
Yes.
Okay, hold on. Now, what schmuck team could have made such a ridiculous decision?
Oh, so you don't even know who he signed
no,
with?
No, I don't know who he signed with.
Okay,
this
is going to be a fun game. All right, let's go.
Who could it be? Atlanta?
Ding. You knew that.
No, I swear to God, I did not know that it was the Falcons.
It's the Falcons. The Falcones. Yeah. Yeah.
At this point, listen, 35 coming off a torn Achilles, he may not even be better than Desmond Ridder at this point.
Oh, that's not true. Stop that. You quit wearing your brother's Bearcat colored glasses. Desmond Ridder sucks. What I will say is, and I give all the credit in the world to Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins now will have played 9 consecutive seasons under some sort of a fully guaranteed contract.
My goodness.
He was franchised for 2 years in Washington. Then he signed a 3-year fully guaranteed contract with the Vikings, then an additional 2-year fully guaranteed contract with the Vikings, and now he gets an additional 5 years. I don't think that contract's fully guaranteed, but I think like the first 3 years are or something. It's incredible. The guy has made like $350 million fully guaranteed, like over the last like decade. It's incredible for a guy that's won one playoff game.
You know, you'd expect like the guy would at least have to win Super Bowls or be a Hall of Famer or something to be able to do that. It's rather remarkable.
Yeah, how about at least one Super Bowl? No, one playoff win. One. Baker Mayfield has 2.
You know, there's a saying in the workforce that if you really want like a big raise or a promotion, you have to leave your current company to get it in most cases. This might be the NFL example of that.
Yeah.
Where you don't see quarterbacks move around from city to city too often. You know, we just talked about Russell Wilson. He's now going to be playing with his third franchise. Kirk Cousins is now playing with his third franchise.
Yeah.
You know, and he just gets these moves and they end up being lucrative. You know, it's sometimes it's better to move than stay where you're at, I guess.
It's crazy. Well, from one crazy quarterback situation to another, we bring ourselves back to the Cleveland Browns. The Browns signed Jameis Winston today.
I'm not a fan.
As their backup quarterback for $8.7 million. Now,
I like most of what they're doing, but I didn't like this move.
Now, I don't know how much of the 8.7 is guaranteed, how much is incentive laden. You know, if Deshaun gets hurt and he starts a bunch of games, he might work up to that $8.7 million number. Look, it was out of left field for me. I didn't see Jameis Winston ever being on the Browns' radar before today. One thing I will say, though, is I don't think the Browns, you know, a lot of the talk once we signed Jameis Winston was, well, why didn't we just bring Joe Flacco back? It's not that simple. I don't think Joe Flacco is ever coming back here because, A, Joe Flacco wants to play. He's 39 years old. He's not going to get very many opportunities the rest of his career to play. And he got that itch back from the Browns this past year when he played the last five games of the season. And if he was going to sit as a backup, I believe he purposely priced himself out of the Browns to do so. Those are the two scenarios, I think, that were for Joe Flacco. I personally think he probably asked the Browns, like, hey, you got to pay me $12 million to be the backup. And the Browns were like, no. And he knew that he was not going to be the starter here unless Deshaun got hurt again. So I just didn't see a scenario where Joe Flacco was coming back. And look, we got to be real about the Joe Flacco stuff. People I saw on social media today were going crazy, like saying like Joe Flacco coming off the greatest season a quarterback's had since the Browns since 1999. He played in five games.
It's not a very high bar to meet in their defense.
He threw eight interceptions in five games.
That's not good.
He threw four pick sixes in five games.
That's really not good.
That's not including the playoffs where he threw two.
Yep.
Listen, Joe Flacco was great. It was exciting. It was awesome. It was a story of the NFL for the last month of the season. He did really well. Look, when Deshaun Watson went out for the rest of the season, I think everybody thought that the season was over.
We thought it was turn out the lights.
Yeah. And credit to Peege, who you mentioned earlier, and credit to DTR, who won the home game against Pittsburgh. P.J. Walker won the Colts game. He won the 49ers game above, you know, all others. And then they signed Flacco once DTR got injured. And we went on that ride. It was magical. And then, you know, clock struck midnight, and Flacco turned back into a pumpkin against the Texans in the playoffs. Was it good? Stop. Just because he played well in four games, well, air quotes, it does not mean that he needs to be the quarterback next year, or it's sacrilege if the Browns didn't bring him back to be the backup. He was not coming back here to be the backup quarterback. He wants to play. Personally, I don't think he's going to sign anywhere as a backup quarterback. I think either he gets a starting job, which you mentioned, like Denver, or...
Won't be Atlanta or New England now, obviously.
Yeah, I don't know if there's another team out there other than Denver, but quite frankly, if he doesn't get a starting job, I think he's just going to retire.
Probably.
The guy's he's 39 years old. He's got $150 million in the bank. What does he need to sit around and hold a clipboard for?
To collect another check, but he doesn't need the money, so.
No. He wants to play. That's why he was never coming back here.
Right. That's why he didn't re-sign last offseason, because he didn't have a chance to start.
Yeah. Right. And it wouldn't shock me if he just didn't sign with the team and went into the season unsigned, and then a situation like what happened with Cleveland last year.
Same thing.
Something happens and he goes and he tries to save that franchise and make a couple million dollars doing that. I mean, you don't have to put your body through an entire NFL season like that.
To give an analogy to the fans' feelings about Joe Flacco, I'm going to explain this in running terms. I don't think I've ever done this before, but I'm going to talk about the greatest event in track and field, according to most people, is, well, other than the 100-meter dash, is the 4x100-meter relay. What the Browns did this last year with their quarterbacks was kind of like the 4x100-meter relay. You had Watson, you had DTR, you had Peege.
Yep.
And who was handing off to run the anchor leg? Joe Flacco.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one who got us across the line into the playoffs. So that's the one who has the most pressure, ultimately, to run the last leg. He did it. Had some stumbles along the way, but got it done. So he was the one who got the lion's share of the credit in the end. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Listen, Joe Flacco, commendable. We love him for it. He will go down in Browns lore for the last quarter of the season in 2023. He helped get us to the playoffs. Now, he sucked ass in the playoffs, but he helped. He was one of the main reasons why we got there.
Don't ask me to run five more meters after the finish line.
Yeah, exactly.
My 38-year-old butt can't do it.
Yeah. But, guys, he was never coming back here. Listen, if it was 30-year-old Joe Flacco, different story. But he was never coming back here. I never saw it.
Yeah.
And like you said, you don't like the signing of Jameis Winston. Why is that?
This is going to sound a little weird, given that Joe Flacco turned the ball over so dang much. But Jameis Winston is a turnover machine.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't like that in a guy who... You know, he's supposed to basically be a game manager if he ever does get in the game,
particularly
with as good of a defense as the Browns have.
He had one of the goofiest seasons in NFL history. This guy threw for 5,000 yards, 30 touchdowns, and 30 interceptions in the same season.
That's very Flacco-like.
Yeah. I don't even think Joe Flacco threw 30 interceptions.
The thing is, I don't think Jameis Winston at this point has the upside to do all the big play things that Flacco did in the stretch of last year.
Yeah,
maybe I'm wrong
right
about that, but I mean, he did earlier in his career. I mean, maybe he still does, but I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. I think the Browns are going into this season trying to right the wrong that they went into last season with, which ended up biting them in the ass because Deshaun Watson got banged up and couldn't stay healthy. The Browns went into last season, at the beginning of the season, with no viable backup quarterback on the roster.
Dumb.
And it bit them in the ass. They had to scramble and thank their lucky stars that they fell into Joe Flacco.
Yep.
Because, quite frankly, if they didn't and they finished like 7-10, is Kevin Stefanski the coach right now?
I don't know. That would have been an interesting call.
Right? And another thing that I want to get into, we probably won't get into it tonight. Curious that Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry have not received contract extensions yet. They're both entering
that
the last year of their contract.
Odd. That is very odd.
Yeah.
You figure that has to get done at some point before the season.
You would think so, but
that would be just wild if that didn't happen.
But usually when coaches and GMs enter the last year of their contract, it's like as soon as the next season, like as soon as like the Super Bowl's over, like boom.
You're gone.
Yeah. No, like okay, let's sign the extension.
Oh, you mean now. Yes.
Yeah. No, but even before that, like as soon as the Super Bowl's over. All right, let's announce it. 3-4 year extension for the coach and the GM. It hasn't happened yet, and we're in the middle of March already.
What could possibly be the Haslam's motivation for making them stew on it like this?
I think that they are furious at how the playoff game with the Texans went.
So it's just an emotional thing.
Well, I think they like Stefanski. I think they like Barry. Do I think that listen, I would have a hard time seeing Andrew Berry get let go. I think it's more likely that and let me preface this. I'm not saying now. Both of those guys are going to be in place for next season. Like that's not. But I could see them making a move at coach more so than a GM. Like if they go like 8-9, I think you're probably looking at a new coach. But again, like we talked about before, the Haslams have committed to writing some big-ass checks for this roster. And if you're not going to win playoff games, just getting to the playoffs is not enough for the Haslams. The Haslams want to win the AFC North. They want to host a playoff game. And they want to win playoff games. And we haven't done that. We've won one playoff game under the Kevin Stefanski tenure, and he wasn't even coaching the game because he had COVID. He was in his basement in 2020 when we won in Pittsburgh.
That's such a funny anecdote.
Right? So, yeah, listen, I'm not saying ring the alarm bells. I am saying it is interesting that neither one of those guys has a contract extension, and they're in a contract year. So, I guess we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, that just doesn't pass the smell test to me.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I mean, we could post this episode, and tomorrow they announce it, you know, at the owners' meetings. You know, who knows?
I'd love that because I don't think you want to go into the season with that kind of uncertainty with your GM and your head coach.
Right.
I don't think that is good business practice. I don't think that would be well for the players on the field.
Yeah, because most of the time when a coach goes into a season in a contract year, they're essentially a lame duck coach.
Yeah. You don't want to have that sort of a power vacuum develop in the midst of a season.
Yeah.
That's
so
just not good.
We'll see what happens. But, yeah, free agency officially opens tomorrow. Deals will be signed tomorrow. And the Browns are still looking. They still need help. They still need depth on their D line. And they still need a linebacker. Keep an eye out for former Miami Dolphin Jerome Baker as an opportunity for the Browns to come in as a linebacker. He's from Cleveland, went to Ohio State, obviously. I think he would fit in nicely with this Browns linebacking core and this Browns defense. So that's a name that I would circle. But, yeah, so we'll have more updates next week as free agency and the offseason moves on and as we look towards the draft. This is going to be the last draft. As of now, the last draft that the Browns go without a first-round pick, thanks to the Deshaun Watson trade. So,
okay. Anyway. Well, we talked about the, you know, maybe the sport that the Haslams haven't exactly perfected in terms of their ownership. You can clearly see the progression from where things have gone, from how bad things were to now. Even in our bad seasons, the Browns are only going like 6-10 or 7-10 now, and in the good years, they're making the playoffs. You can see where the progression have been for the Haslams. But there's no doubting that they've already done incredible things for another one of their ownership properties, and that is the Columbus Crew.
Yes, sir.
Columbus Crew, for those of you who don't know, and if you are not into soccer, you might as well just tune out now. But the Crew have won the MLS Cup 3 times, twice within the last 4 years, and, of course, last year when they defeated Los Angeles FC in the final to win the 2023 MLS Cup. And they are off to a very good start to this year's campaign as well. They started off the season on a high. They ended up winning their first game 1-0 against Atlanta. Second game, they pretty much had it in the bag but let the win slip away thanks to a 95th-minute equalizer by Minnesota. But then this past Saturday, they ended up winning a game in very similar fashion when a 99th-minute winner came up for Columbus against the Chicago Fire.
Saw that highlight, yeah.
That got them to 2-0-1 on the season. They are tied atop the Eastern Conference standings to start the year. That's great. That's fantastic. Everything looks like they're, you know, on course for another great season. But there is a possibility this season could be even greater than that.
Why is that?
Well, I will tell you, and it involves a new tournament that has just been made by FIFA. The entry of which is done through a tournament that has been ridiculed by very many, including yourself, over the years. And okay. I am talking about the CONCACAF Champions Cup. It used to be the CONCACAF Champions League.
Okay.
So basically, this tournament is the championship of North America at club football. And I'll just say that Mexican teams have basically had this tournament on lockdown for almost 2 decades. In fact, the only team not from Mexico that has won the CONCACAF Champions League or Cup in the last almost two decades with Seattle Sounders, who did it in 2022. That victory by Seattle qualified them to the brand spanking new, expanded, super shiny, amazing FIFA Club World Cup, which is debuting here in the United States next year, 2025. Hmm. This is not to be confused with the FIFA World Cup, which is going to be here in 2026.
Yeah, that's international. This is clubs.
This will be club teams. So this tournament basically takes the top 12 teams from Europe, the top 6 from South America, and the top 4 from the other continents, except for Oceania, which only gets one. And so, like, it basically, the easiest way to get in is if you win your continental championship. So, like, for Europe, this would be Chelsea, Real Madrid, and Manchester City have won the most 3 recent. Then whoever wins this year will also for sure get in. And then the next 8 teams in terms of UEFA coefficient will also get in. And it's the same thing with CONMEBOL. Like, it'll be their 4 champions plus the next 2 in coefficient. But in CONCACAF, there's only 4 spots. CONCACAF is North America. So you have to win to get in. So this year's CONCACAF Champions Cup means a hell of a lot because you can get into this tournament by winning this. And actually, they haven't announced this yet. This is another aspect of this. There is a spot for the host country in the FIFA Club World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that the winner of the 2024 MLS Cup is going to get that spot. They're not going to announce it until after the CONCACAF Champions Cup final, probably, because they want our teams to be, you know, really going gung-ho to try to win the event, I think. And if they knew that up front, they would probably just be putting their eggs in the MLS Cup basket instead.
That that seems incredibly unfair. They've already started the season.
Why wouldn't
they announce what all is at stake for the entire season?
That's not on the MLS though. That's on FIFA to decide. They very rarely do things in a very sure-handed manner.
Yeah, right. I don't know. Do we really need more club games?
Well, maybe we do, maybe we don't. There is that thought of, and in fact, when Gianni Infantino, the president of FIFA, came out with the Club World Cup, the expanded version of it, that was a real complaint. You know, more fixtures, that's more impact on teams, more on players, injuries, big concern. Here's my response to that, though. We have the Guinness ICC. We have the Audi Cup. We have all these events that take place during the summer anyway.
Yeah,
so
but
what difference does it make to actually have a competitive event 1 out of 4 years?
Because very rarely are you actually playing all of your starters during those games.
You're probably playing a lot of your second team guys too. That's
second team and
point.
Your young players. And when you do play your starting players, they're never playing more than a half in any game.
It's kind of like the NFL preseason in that sense.
Yeah.
You know more about these events than I do, so
I don't know. I just think there's too many club games. I mean, you're literally running these players into the ground, and you're doing it like now. Like I was watching Arsenal and Porto, their Champions League game today, and the game went to extra time. But like, these guys are cramping up, their hands on their hips, they're like on the verge of like keeling over, like passing out. Like, do we really need another tournament? I mean, these guys have every league has their actual league season. Then they have like an in-season like cup, like Coppa Italia, FA Cup, like
the domestic cup tournament. Yes.
Then you have Champions League, you have Europa League. A couple years ago they started the Conference League. Like
tertiary competition.
What more do we need? I understand it's once every 4 years, but it's like soccer already has the shortest off season of any sport ever. It's like the season is over at the end of May and they're playing again in the middle of August.
It's going again in August.
So yeah. It's like they have what?
2 months.
Yeah, 2 months.
It is pretty brutal.
And there's gonna and what about like they have we already have the Euro and the World Cup and alternating every 2 years. Like, what more do we need?
Yeah, you're basically in a situation where you're going to have the whole season plus a summer tournament now 3 out of every 4 years.
It's
the world we live in now. These guys are, you know, probably, I mean, not probably, they are at the very top of the sport getting compensated very well for this.
True.
Here's the case I will make for this. And I'll throw it through the lens of Columbus. And also, let's not forget FC Cincinnati, who also won the Supporters Shield last year, which meant that they got into the CONCACAF Champions League as well.
And then they got foofed by the Crew.
Yes, in last year's MLS semifinal, Eastern Conference final. The Hell is Real Derby went Columbus's way en route to the title.
Get foofed, Cincy.
So I'll just make the little bit on Cincy here. The first leg of their round of 16 tie against FC Monterrey, this is fascinating because their top striker from last year, Brandon Vasquez, transferred this offseason from Cincinnati to Monterrey. Hmm. So then in leg one, back at TQL Stadium in Cincinnati, Monterrey wins 1-0. Guess who scored the only goal? One Brandon Vasquez. So they're trailing in that series 1-0 going to the second game at what I think could be the best soccer stadium in North America,
the
BBVA in Monterrey, which literally you sit on one side of the stadium, you have a giant mountain range looking outside the other end of the stadium. That's unbelievable that they managed to do that. Mm-hmm. So that fixture takes place on Thursday. Columbus's matchup in the round of 16 was against Houston Dynamo. So it was an intra-league kind of a tie. Columbus won the first game last week in Houston, 1-0. The second leg, Columbus led almost throughout until a questionable penalty call late gave Houston their only shot on target of the game where they equalized. But Columbus still won the series 2-1. They move on to the quarterfinals where they will play the winner of Orlando City and Tigres Monterrey in the round of 8. So Columbus is now in a situation where they very well they're positioned very well to possibly make a run at this thing. And again, when you've only had one American team, or actually one American slash Canadian team, go and win this thing in the last few years, plus with the Club World Cup on the line, this is an opportunity unlike any that Columbus Crew have ever had. Literally, if they win the CONCACAF Champions Cup this year, they could be playing against Manchester City. They could be playing against Real Madrid.
Oh, geez.
They could be playing against Palmeiras or Corinthians or some of the top teams in South America. This would be like club soccer completely on roids, unlike anything that any Crew or FC Cincinnati supporter could ever. And I don't think they're going to beat Monterrey in the second leg, but I mean, they could. You know, to be able to do that, it's an opportunity unlike anything we've ever seen in the club game, really. So,
and I don't think we need it.
That's the case for why the tournament should happen. Will, you know, should it, shouldn't it? Dan's laid out some of the negatives for it. That's certainly something that will be debated over the next 12 months, but I have a feeling once the tournament gets going, there's going to be a real push behind it. But we will get there. But the bottom line is, as far as Columbus is concerned, they're out the box very well. It certainly looks like this, I mean, this could potentially be the biggest season in Columbus Crew
history. I mean, what's the push going to be behind it? The semifinals and the finals of that tournament every time is going to be European teams. It's basically just going to be the Champions League replayed. Don't even try telling me MLS teams are going to.
So one of the big debates right now is, because of the presence of Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo where they are, is whose league is better, the MLS or the Saudi league? We may get a chance to look at that more closely in the Club World Cup, because Al Hilal is already qualified. They're in there.
I'm going to be honest.
Al Nassr could potentially qualify if they win the AFC Champions League.
I don't think anybody really cares.
Oh, I disagree with that.
You can disagree all you want, but you're wrong.
Anybody cares. More on top of that, you don't think the teams from South America could contend?
No.
Hmm.
Like who?
Corinthians, Palmeiras?
No.
Some of those teams from Brazil? You don't think so?
No.
Okay.
No.
That's the end of this discussion.
No.
I guess we'll have to play the matches and find out.
I wish not.
He doesn't even want to play him because he says that it's a waste of time. Going.
Well, it's a waste of time, and I don't think it's honest. Quite honestly, I don't think it's fair for the players.
All right, so let's say that it works out exactly the way you think it does. Let's say the Final Four is Inter Milan, Real Madrid, Manchester City, and I don't know, Bayern Munich.
What I think would be hilarious is if you said 2025 this starts?
Yes.
Is if the Final Four of the Champions League is the exact same as the Final Four of this tournament. That would be hilarious.
It's not impossible given the teams that are in it.
Yeah. I mean, the only way that this would set up to where like clubs like that, like an MLS club or like a South American club or, you know, wherever else, would be like if the semifinals were set up to where you can only have one European team in the semifinals, one team from North America in the semifinals, one team from South America in the semifinals, and something like that. If that's the case,
yeah, that's not the way it's set up.
Right. If that's the case, just throw the tournament out anyway, because what the hell's the point?
The old version of the Club World Cup was basically that. They just put the champions of each continent, and
garbage.
It was like a 16 tournament.
Yeah.
You know, that's the old version. That's what's getting scrapped in favor of the, you know, new World Cup style.
Here's how I see this tournament going: is you're going to end up in the early rounds having like Real Madrid against the champion of the MLS. Real Madrid wins 6-0, moves on, and then you're just going to end up. It's just going to end up being survival of the fittest, and there will end up being three or four European teams in the Final Four, and it'll probably be the same teams that are vying for the Champions League. Will it be cool to see like matchups that we've never seen before in the first tournament? Sure. But again, like I said, I'm glory to Columbus, Vamos Columbus, Crew 96 all the way. But if they get matched up with like Manchester City, they're going to lose 9-1.
Probably.
It's going to happen.
I don't know about 9-1, but it's going to be ugly.
So, look, yeah, I'm not for it, but whatever. It sounds like it's happening, so I guess we'll see how it goes the first season, but I don't know. I just think there's too much soccer. And I love soccer, but I think the players are just absolutely run into the ground.
There's no disagreement there. They play like 50, 60 fixtures a season. That's a lot.
And don't start with me like, "Oh, baseball they play 162 and basketball they play 82 games a year." People don't realize that soccer players literally run like 10 miles a game.
The midfielders do for sure.
Yes. And like, okay, we don't have a game today. They're still running a crap ton in practice.
Yeah.
And a lot of these teams play twice a week. It's not like the NFL when you play once a week. These teams are playing twice a week because they play so many games because there's so many tournaments already. I don't know.
I saw the impact of this firsthand with Newcastle United this year, because last year they were generally only playing one game a week unless they happened to have a cup fixture that week. And they played really well pretty much throughout the season. They finished in fourth place in the Premier League, which is their highest finish in 20 years. They went to the Champions League. This year they had to play, for most of the first half of the season, they had to play two games a week.
Now you guys are... They're 10th right now.
And they got
they?
Absolutely beat up to heck with injury. And
yeah, that's the thing.
And now they're in 10th place right now, which is, you know, not good, obviously. But, you know, they are in the last eight of the FA Cup, but they got to play Manchester City on Saturday. Ugh. Don't know how that's – it's at the Etihad, too. So that's probably the end of that run.
Have fun. So all right. Well, that was another news. So we'll see what happens. But, yeah, I think that's going to do it for us on this episode of Living Off the Land. Appreciate you guys listening, as always. Episode 275. Tell them where they can find you on social media.
That's at Stiffs McGee.
At Daniel J. Ford for me. You can follow the show at the LOTL Podcast. And, you know, you say it's Stiffs McGee every week, but your Instagram handle is not at Stiffs McGee.
No, that's at Stefano.Steven.
There you go.
So...
So
you can follow me there too.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, so that's going to do it for us. I'm Dan for Steven, for Champ, who's napping on the floor over here. This has been Living Off the Land, and we'll catch you guys next week. See ya.
Bye.